From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. An hour of sounds from radio's golden age, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with an episode of radio's outstanding Theater of Thrills. I'm speaking of Suspense, one of the longest-running series of radio's golden era. The pilot program was produced in the summer of 1940, their adaptation of the Alfred Hitchcock classic The Lodger. But the series didn't actually debut on CBS until June 17th of 1942, with the first episode being The Burning Court. The final episode, program 945 in the series, aired over 20 years later on September 30th of 1962, that episode being Devilstone. It, along with the final episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, both airing that fateful night, a night which many OTR historians consider to be the end of the golden age of radio. Suspense, in my opinion, was a series which defied categorization. Of course, many considered it to be a thriller anthology, and it is that to a large extent, but many of the episodes could also qualify as horror, mystery, crime drama, science fiction. One episode in particular, A Killing in Abilene, is easily categorized as a western, in my opinion, so as I say, this series really defied genre or categorization. There were many famous producers and directors of Suspense during its long run, including William Speer, Elliot Lewis, and William N. Robeson, and this episode was crafted under Mr. Robeson's guiding hand. This is program number 746 in the series. It originally aired on CBS on April 13th of 1958, and it stars Frank Lovejoy. Many old-time radio fans know that name from his role as newspaper reporter Randy Stone in the early 50s NBC series Nightbeat. He also had many other roles. For example, he was the Blue Beetle in the early 1940s. But Mr. Lovejoy made several appearances on Suspense in the mid and late 1950s, including this fine performance. We have an Armed Forces Radio re-airing of this program. Most of the episodes of Suspense from this time period, 1958, are only available in their Armed Forces Radio form to old-time radio collectors. So, without further ado, here is Frank Lovejoy and his performance in Win, Place, or Die, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding Theater of Thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
There is an easily recognizable distinction between a bookkeeper and a bookmaker. They usually are to be found one within and the other without the law. But when a bookkeeper starts taking from a bookmaker, such a nice distinction is apt to become confused amid photo finishes, scratch sheets, and the morning wire, with results ranging from welshing to grand larceny, from mayhem to murder. Results which we hope will keep you in suspense. Listen, listen then as Frank Lovejoy stars in Win, Place, or Die, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Memo on medals. Information about our military awards and decorations. The highly rated Air Medal is a bronze compass rose suspended by a pointer and charged with a swooping American eagle clutching lightning bolts in its talons. The ribbon consists of a wide blue band, flanked by narrow golden-orange bands, with the blue repeated along the edges. This dramatically designed decoration is given for meritorious achievement while participating in an aerial flight under circumstances which do not justify awarding the higher-ranked Distinguished Flying Cross. The Air Medal was authorized for heroic action after September 8, 1939. It has proved to be a major source of pride to those airmen who have earned it, and a stimulus to others for greater devotion to duty. Extra service and extra accomplishment merit special attention and recognition. The Air Medal pays tribute to those who distinguish themselves and do honor to their country and their branch of service while participating in aerial flight.
And now, Win, Place, or Die, starring Frank Lovejoy,
A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
A salary will only go so far, and a bookkeeper's salary like mine not quite that far. But I thought I saw an out, and I played it. It seemed like a sure thing. You see, there were only three of us in the main office of the Randolph Theater chain. The boss, me, and Jeannie, the gal I was going to marry.
Joe?
Yeah, honey?
You gonna take me to dinner tonight?
Well, I don't feel much like going out. Why don't you grab some frozen stuff, and I'll come by your place.
Broke again?
Ah, oh, Jeannie, don't start that. You know I got a lot of old bills.
You promised to give me some money each week to save for the house and the furniture.
Well, I will next week. I'll start next week.
Joe, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Yes, there is. Something's wrong. Something you're not telling me.
Oh, drop it, Jeannie. Will you just drop it? Randolph Theaters.
Papa?
Yeah?
Sid Kurtz.
Yeah.
You're late, Joe.
Yes, I know. I'm going out to lunch now. I'll see you in a few minutes.
That's nice, Joe. I'll be waiting at the corner.
Who is that?
That's the guy I'm working on a deal with. I'll tell you all about it someday.
Don't wait too long, Joe.
Randolph Theaters.
Joe, this is Rita. I didn't get a letter from you this morning.
Oh, I know. Rita, look, I can't give you anything this week.
Joe, I have the rent to pay and Jimmy needs clothes.
Yeah, I know, but I'm in a jam.
I should think you'd at least want to support your son.
Oh, get off my back, will you?
Maybe if that girl you're running around with down at the office found out you have an ex-wife and a kid to support, she wouldn't think so much of you. Maybe I ought to tell her.
You do that, and you'll never get another dime. Once one of them gets on your back, they all climb on. But there was one I couldn't stop. Sid Kurtz. I opened the bag with the cash receipts from the Tivoli Theater, changed the figures, and took what I needed. It was mounting up. Every day it was mounting up, and I needed a break to pay it back.
Well, late, chum.
Well, I had to make a phone call.
I mean 3 days late. I pay off on Fridays. I like to collect on Fridays. This is Monday. Now, where's the dough?
It's right here. $54, right?
That's right, chum. But this week, remember, win or lose, Friday.
I can find another bookie,
sir. Sure, but we all work for Charlie McManus. He'll get it anyhow, Joe, and he'll get it on Friday. Remember that.
There's nothing you can do when the ponies start running against you. 100 was easy to cover, but it got to be 200, 500, nearly 1,000.
Is that the box office total for last week?
Yeah.
Mr. Randolph wants to see it.
Why does he want to see it?
He checks it every once in a while, doesn't he? Is something wrong, Joe?
Do I act as though there's anything wrong?
Oh, hello, Hopper.
Here's the tape, Mr. Randolph.
Well, the grosses seem a bit low.
Television. The weather, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's the long haul that counts. Our profit for the year. We'll know that after the audit.
Audit?
Yes. Well, that's right. You weren't with us last year. We make our annual audit the end of this month, Harper. That'll be in 8 days.
Charlie McManus speaking.
Charlie, this is Joe Harper.
Yeah, Harper.
A bet for Sid Kurtz's book.
All right, sure.
What's the line on Sturdy Duke and the Sixth?
Beaver money. You should walk in.
Well, I want a 1,000 on the nose.
Did you say a grand, Harper?
Yeah, on the nose.
Just a minute. Harper, Sid Kurtz wants you to meet him for lunch.
Oh, I can't. I got work to do.
I won't take the bet unless you talk to Sid before the race.
Well, okay, tell him to meet me at the cafeteria.
About this bet, Joe.
Well, what's wrong with it?
Nothing. Except I'd like to have the dough before the race. That's McManus's orders.
But I haven't got it.
That's what I mean, Chum. You can't afford that kind of dough.
Oh, you've got to take the bet.
I don't got to do anything unless McManus tells me.
Well, look, Sid. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not supposed to, but... Well, it isn't my bet.
What do you mean?
I'm planting it for Mr. Randolph.
Randolph? Your boy?
Yeah,
You wouldn't kid me, would you, Harper?
No, Sid, you know me.
Yeah, I know you. All right, tell your boss he's got a bet. And the payoff day is Friday.
Sure, Sid, thanks.
I'm glad it ain't your bet. I've seen guys get themselves in a bind. They bet $2 and lose, then it's a $5, $10, $100. And it gets to be a grand. That's where the trouble starts, Harper. Loser starts small, and sometimes he winds up betting his life.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Oh, Joe, what are you doing?
Oh, hi, Daphne. Just eating a midnight snack.
What is that mess?
That mess is a liverwurst, salami, lettuce, and peanut butter delight.
Nightmare is more like it. What woke you up?
My stomach was growling. What woke you up?
You. And I was dreaming such a pleasant dream.
Oh? What?
I dreamed all of our savings bonds had matured and we were cashing them in.
That kind of a dream I can appreciate.
We were planning a trip around the world, and you bought me a fur coat, and I bought you that fishing tackle you want. Oh, it was gorgeous.
Well, it doesn't have to be just a dream. Some of our savings bonds are ready to mature now.
Joe, maybe we shouldn't cash them in. They can go on earning interest, you know, and it adds up fast.
I know. That's why we started buying savings bonds, remember? With a bond a month on the payroll savings plan, our money is saved automatically.
Stop waving that sandwich under my nose. You're making me hungry.
Well, fix yourself a sandwich, ma'am. I got all the makings right over here.
All right. Move over, you bond-buying midnight maverick. I'm going to fix myself a humdinger.
And now, starring Frank Lovejoy, Act Two of Win, Place, or Die.
The trouble with horses is they can't read. At least they don't read the racing form. Sturdy Duke finished fourth. Next day, Time Step finished out of the money. Thursday, Atomic Dust ran out. By Friday, I was into Sid Kurtz's book for $4,600. I waited all day for his call, but it never came. I thought I had one more day. But when I got home, I found I was wrong.
You keep late hours, Joe.
Kurtz?
Yeah, Kurtz. The guy who gets sore when people break dates with him.
I tried to call you.
You did? Funny, I never got the message. McManus must be getting absent-minded.
Well, I tried all day. I tell you, the line was busy.
That's a pity, Joe.
They must have been booking a lot of action today to tie up your lines like that.
Well, the play was light today, Joe. Very light. We had a bad week. Book got hit hard. I'm glad you got 4,600 for me, Joe. You have got 4,600, haven't you?
No. I haven't got it.
Oh, it's too bad. I can't tell you how sorry I am, Joe. I sort of choke up. I can't find a word.
Ah, Sid, now listen to me. I'll have the dough for you tomorrow. Tomorrow, sure. It isn't my fault. They weren't my bets. You know that.
Oh, you told me.
Randolph was away all day. I even waited for him late, but he didn't even call me. He'll be in tomorrow, though. I'll get the dough for you. I'll get it.
All right, Joe. Get a good night's sleep, kid. I'll wait till tomorrow.
Oh, thank you, Sid. You're a friend.
Sure, every day. Except Friday.
Yeah. Good night, Sid.
Good night, Joe. Joe.
Yeah?
There's something I think you ought to know.
What's that?
I hate a Welsher. Used to be an elevator operator in your office building. He tried to beat me out of a $20 bet. I didn't like to do it, but I gave him a frozen stomach.
That's a big idea.
Just telling you the story, Joe. I hit this other guy a lot harder for a lousy $20. He was in the hospital for quite a while. See you tomorrow, Joe.
Morning, Jeannie.
Morning.
Morning, Harper.
Morning, sir.
Oh, a day like this, I'd rather play golf than work. Tell me I'm dispensable, Jeannie.
You're not. Not today. Couple of distributors coming in, And Mr. Charlie McManus called you.
Who? McManus? I don't know anybody named McManus. Who's he with?
I don't know. But he said you owed him $4,600.
Well, I guess I should know him then, shouldn't I? Do we have a creditor named McManus on the books, Harper?
No, we don't, Mr. Randolph.
He wasn't very pleasant about it. He wants you to meet him tonight with the money.
What did he say? Where?
In the bar at the Tip Top Club. He said there'd be trouble if you went there by 9 o'clock. I don't like it, Mr. Randolph.
Neither do I. Jeannie, you better call Mrs. Randolph and tell her I won't be home for dinner.
You're going to meet this McManus?
Whatever he wants. I certainly should find out about it.
Well, maybe he made a mistake. He might have you mixed up with some other Randolph. Let me go talk to him.
Thanks, Harper. But when a man says I owe him money, I prefer to talk to him myself.
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe, stop reading that paper and talk to me.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, I was talking to Mrs. Snyder today. You know, she's the one whose boy had 31% less cavities.
Uh-huh.
Well, she thinks that we should buy bigger savings bonds.
Uh-huh.
She says that when people can afford it, it makes more sense. Oh, she says there are a lot of different denominations. They start at $25, but then there are $50, $100, $200, and even $500 bonds.
Is that so?
And then with the ones we've already bought through the payroll savings plan, we have quite a nest egg.
Uh-huh.
Are you listening to me?
Uh-huh.
Did you know that the total accumulated compounded semi-annual interest of the Series E savings bond will amount to 93 1/3% of the original purchasing price?
Uh-huh.
I thought so. Joe, what did I say?
You said that United States savings bonds are a safe, easy way of investing.
I did.
That they help guide our country's freedom.
And?
They're the best investment in America's future.
I said something else, too.
Oh, yeah. You said that the total accumulated compounded semi-annual interest of the Series E savings bond will amount to 93 1/3% of the original purchase price.
Well, now, how did you do that?
Husband's trade secret.
And now, starring Frank Lovejoy, Act 3 of Win, Place, or Die.
It was a good thing Saturday was a half day because I had a lot of things to set up. I ducked out on Jeannie when we left at noon. All I needed from her was that she'd remember the phone call from McManus, and I knew she would. But I needed more from my ex-wife, Rita. I needed an alibi.
Joe.
Yes, honey.
What are you doing here, Joe?
May I come in?
Oh, sure.
Rita, I got to thinking about you and Jimmy. I brought him a couple of things. Where is he?
At a movie. He goes every Saturday afternoon with the other kids.
Well, I'm sorry I missed him, but it's nice to be alone with you for a while. 3 years is a long time, Rita.
Joe, what are you trying to say?
That I miss you. I'm sorry about what happened to us.
I couldn't do anything else, Joe. Not after the way you treated me. And you looked out.
Well, I've been sorry ever since.
You've got another girl.
Well, it's no good, honey. Nobody's any good but you. Take me back, Rita.
Oh, Joe.
Honey.
Joe, I don't know what to say. What'll I tell my family and Jimmy?
We'll tell them together tomorrow. I'll rent a car. We'll go for a Sunday drive, the three of us, okay?
Oh, yes.
That's my girl. Rita, there's something I'd like you to do for me.
What, Joe?
Well, I'm in a little jam. I've got to straighten it out tonight. Anybody should ask you, will you say I spent the evening here? Will you? Say from about 8 until midnight.
Is that why you came, Joe? Because you're in trouble?
No, I'm not in any real trouble. I just have to settle something before we can start out together again. Will you do it for me, honey?
I'll do it, Joe. I don't know why, but I'll do it.
It was a setup, a sure thing. It couldn't miss. I went home and got the gun, a war souvenir I picked up for a few bucks, no registration to be traced. And at 8:30, I was in an alley beside the Tip Top Club when Mr. Randolph pulled up in a taxi and paid off the driver.
All right, keep the change.
Mr. Randolph.
What? Who is it?
Oh, it's me, Joe Harper.
Harper? What are you doing here?
I came down to help you out.
Help me with what? What do you have to do with
it? You come back here in the alley. I'll explain it to you. It's far enough, Mr. Randolph.
Oh, Harper, what is it? Harper,
come on! I walked away from it before the crowd gathered. I bought a ticket and went in to see a movie. When I got out, the midnight edition of the Sunday papers were off the press. It was all there on the front page. Bookmaker arrested for murder of theater owner. Charles McManus charged with shooting. I went home. I had company again. I knew I would, but this was company I didn't have to worry about.
You knew about McManus's phone call to Mr. Randolph?
Oh, I didn't take the call, Lieutenant. I heard Jeannie. That's Miss Thorpe. Tell Mr. Randolph about it.
Randolph say he knew this McManus?
No, he denied it.
You get along with your boss?
Well, sure.
Well, your story checks out with Miss Thorpe's. Oh, by the way, she tells me that you two are engaged.
Yes, that's right.
Saturday night is a big date night. How come you two weren't together?
Oh, well, Lieutenant, I've been married before. I've got an ex-wife and a kid. I was visiting them.
Ah, I see. Well, I think you'd better come in with me.
What for?
Well, you're sort of a witness. Your testimony won't help this McManus any, and he has some bad boys on his payroll.
Oh, you mean you want to take me into protective custody?
Yes, that's right. Just for a couple of days. We've got Miss Thorpe, too.
Well, I don't think I'd better.
Well, you don't have to come in, of course, but it would be safer.
Well, thank you just the same, Lieutenant, but I'm all right. I'm not afraid. I wanted protective custody bad, but I couldn't take it. I'd remembered something just in time. The auditor. They'd be in Monday. Randolph's death wouldn't stop that, and the books had to balance. I went down to the office and started to work. I worked the rest of the night and all day Sunday, changing figures, erasing slowly and carefully. Then I took some petty cash slips Randolph had signed and changed the amounts. By Sunday night, I had it right on the nose. I put the books away, got my coat, and the phone. The office phone ringing on Sunday night. I didn't want to answer it, but I had to. Hello?
Oh, Joe.
Nita, what's the matter? Why are you calling me at the office?
Joe, I've been trying to get you at home all day.
Well, how did you know I was here?
The detective said you might be. He said he was going to look for you there.
What detective?
He answered the phone at your place. He asked me who I was, and I told him. Then he asked me where you were last night.
Well, you told him I was with you?
No.
Why, Rita, why?
Because I was mad at you. You promised to come today and take me and Jimmy for a ride, and you didn't show up. I didn't know, Joe. I didn't know about the murder.
And that cop Corrigan, he's on his way up here?
Oh, his name wasn't Corrigan. He said it was Kurtz, Sid Kurtz.
I dropped the phone and ran into the hall, and then I heard it, the whine of the night elevator stopping, the door sliding open.
Hello, chum.
Sid, you've got to listen to me.
I'm trying to listen, chum. The payoff day has been changed. It ain't Friday anymore. It's now.
There was a fire axe on the wall. I tore it loose and threw it at him. It hit him and knocked him down. I turned and raced for the stairway, but he was on his feet and after me. I took the stairs four at a time, but he was right behind me. Only one more flight to the lobby, but I'd never make it now. An iron gate stretched across the stairs, and by the dim night bulb, I read the sign. This exit closed after 6 p.m.
Tough luck, chum. Looks like you lost another photo finish.
Sid, I'll get the money for you. I'll get it.
Oh, it ain't money anymore, chum. You bet your life, Joe. And you lost the bet.
Oh.
You lost the bet, Joe.
Sid.
You lost the bet.
Suspense.
starred in William N. Robeson's production of Win, Place, or Die by Joel Murcott. Supporting Mr. Lovejoy in Win, Place, or Die were Joan Banks, Ellen Morgan, Joe DeSantis, Bill Quinn, and Jack Crucian. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Stan Freberg in Alibi Me. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense has been brought to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Place or Die, the 746th episode of Suspense, starring Frank Lovejoy, William N. Robeson producing and directing. From April 13th of 1958 on CBS, rebroadcast for Our Troops Overseas by the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, complete with some of their famous late 50s public service announcements in lieu of the network commercials. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, where we present a wide variety of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, you can do so by email. The address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. Again, that's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to email me with your questions, comments, suggestions, and even requests for old-time radio. And if I have those requests, I'll do my best to accommodate them on future Upstate Radio Theater broadcasts. Again, qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. If you want more information about the Radio Theater, including detailed program playlists, or if you want to stream this and other episodes in the series at your convenience, then you'll want to visit our blog and website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you want the playlist or audio for this episode, look for Upstate Radio Theater program number 1812. Well, as I was listening to the closing moments of Suspense, I noticed that Sid Kurtz, just before he murdered Joe, said, "You bet your life." Well, I wasn't sure what I was going to conclude this hour of old-time radio with, but then it hit me. I figured, why not change direction completely and offer an episode of You Bet Your Life, the famous comedy quiz program starring Groucho Marx. The series debuted on ABC Radio on October 27, 1947, transitioning to CBS October 5, 1949, finally making its transition to NBC Radio and Television on October 4th of 1950, where it enjoyed a 10-year run, the final episode on radio airing on June 10th of 1960, The series continued on television for one more year afterwards. This broadcast, of course, starring Groucho Marx with famous announcer George Fetterman, aired on March 24th of 1954. Of course, each episode had a secret word, and if one of the contestants uttered that secret word, they won some extra prize money. Let's see if any of the contestants utter the secret word for this episode, which is floor. You Bet Your Life, wrapping up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is floor. F-L-O-O-R.
Really?
You Bet Your Life.
Floor.
it's Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood and brought to you by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers. The dealers who have on display the outstanding DeSoto Automatic with fully automatic power flight transmission and the all-new Plymouth, your best buy in the low-priced field. And now, here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Horace Greeley. Well, here I am again with $2,000 for one of our couples. A lot of money, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Would you like to win it?
Love to have it.
Well, maybe you'll know the answer. Would you split it with me?
I think it could be arranged.
It could be arranged with me, I know. I don't know. Who's first, George?
Well, Groucho, we invited some girls who work for a large manufacturing concern to the program tonight. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Patricia Darien, and her partner is Mr. Peter Ellesmere Jones. So, folks, would you come in, please, and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks, to You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word and you'll divide $100. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Now, let's see. Patricia Darien, huh?
Yes.
And Mr. Peter Ellesmere Jones.
Huh? That's right.
In 7 years on the air, I think this is the first Jones we've ever had.
Well, it's not really Jones, you know.
It's not really Jones?
No, it's Ellesmere Jones with a hyphen sort of mixed up in between those.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, that name has a lot of dash to it if you have a hyphen. But where are you from, Pete?
Well, I'm from Wales.
You're from Wales, huh? You're not Jones, you're Jonah. Huh?
Well, touché.
Touché. Well, let's get down to details. What sort of work do you do, Pete?
Well, I had my training as a civil instructor engineer, and at the moment I'm working for Kobig & Kobig on Wilshire, checking some structural steelwork for the marine barracks at Camp Pendleton.
Oh. And where do you work, Pat?
I work for the Carnation Milk Company on Wilshire Boulevard.
Well, science is certainly wonderful. They're now getting milk from carnations, huh? I knew you could get it from milkweed, but I didn't know you could get it from carnations. Well, do you operate a milking machine for this outfit, or do you milk by hand?
No, I'm a secretary.
You're a secretary?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, in that case, it's a good thing you don't milk the cows, huh? They'd probably object to your shorthand. Well, I've heard of your company. It's a very famous company, but I know they produce an awful lot of milk. How many cows do they own, Pat?
Groucho, we don't actually own any cows.
Well, where do you get your milk from? Coconuts?
The milk is sold to us by small local producers.
Small cows?
No, small producers.
Oh. Where are you from, Pat?
I was born in Peoria, Illinois.
Peoria, huh?
Yes.
Oh, a big... Yeah, it was an old line. It was a show called Lightning many years ago. It was a very famous play on Broadway. And I remember in this scene, the judge asked this girl, she said, why did you get married? And she said, well, I was in Peoria and it was raining. That's a very famous line out of the play Lightning. Frank Bacon was in it. Are you married?
No, I'm single, Groucho.
You're single, mm-hmm. Groucho, huh? That's a funny name. Single Groucho. Huh? Would you like to get married?
Well, eventually, probably, yes.
Eventually? Why not now? You know that a flour company used that slogan and sold 45 million bags of flour? You should be able to bag one poor sucker. You married, Pete?
No, I'm afraid not. Well, I'm not afraid, but I'm not.
You're getting alarmed rather early, aren't you?
Well, not really. No.
Well, Pat, I'd like you to meet Mr. Ellesmere hyphen Jones. Huh? Pete, do you consider yourself an eligible bachelor?
Well, I consider myself a bachelor, but not particularly eligible.
You're alive and breathing, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, you're a very nice couple, and my advice is for both of you to win lots of money tonight and open a joint checking account. And you'll have something to argue about, and you'll have a very happy marriage. All right, now you're going to play Your Bet Your Life. We start you off with a $100 bankroll, and when you miss a question, you lose half of whatever you've got. Is that clear?
Yes.
If you think you've won enough, you can stop any time. Now, let's see how much money you can make. You selected music, and remember, the more the question is worth, the harder it is. Now, what question do you want?
Oh, it's 70.
Fine.
All right, 70. 75, did you say?
70.
All right, Jack Macon and the orchestra will play a song. Let's see if you can identify it.
Perfidia?
Perfidia is right, yes.
You're living, boy.
You now have $170.
$170. Now, which question do you want to take?
80.
80? Okay. Andrew Segovia is one of the world's greatest performers on which instrument?
Wonderful.
Guitar.
Guitar is right.
You now have $250.
Now, you can go ahead or you can quit.
Wonderful.
90?
I'll try it.
Duke Ellington wrote the number Jack Meekin and the orchestra are going to play. You tell me the name of this modern classic. Play, Jack.
Mood Indigo?
Mood Indigo is right.
Yes, he's now climbing to $340.
What a nest egg for your marriage,
yes.
Eh?
It's your last go.
It's your last chance to beat the other couples. Which one are you going to go for?
Oh, might as well.
Well, let's go, 100.
All right, we all know the song Hail, Hail, the Gang's All Here. From what operetta was the tune taken?
Oh, you're kidding.
Talk it over.
I don't even know an operetta.
Florida?
No, you ought to know this. You're English. It's The Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan.
Well, you lost half your bankroll, so you still have $170.
Well, thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth deal.
Thank you, Groucho.
Sorry you didn't win.
Ladies and gentlemen, for a car with real power, real get-up-and-go, try a DeSoto automatic with the mighty DeSoto 170-horsepower Fire Dome V8 engine. This DeSoto Fire Dome engine is designed to give you power with maximum efficiency and economy. And the secret is in the design of the hemispherical combustion chambers. These dome-shaped chambers are the reason why the Fire Dome engine can squeeze every bit of power from your fuel. They enable you to drive your DeSoto automatic on regular gasoline and still get premium performance. Think of that. A 170-horsepower engine operating perfectly that lets you use regular gasoline. I'm sure that once you get behind the wheel of a DeSoto automatic and feel the smooth, powerful response of the mighty DeSoto 170-horsepower V8 engine, you'll say there's no other automobile engine can match it. Visit your DeSoto Plymouth dealer tomorrow. You'll see that the great DeSoto 170-horsepower Fire Dome engine is just one reason why DeSoto puts you ahead automatically.
For the finest car yet, you should drive, you should get the DeSoto Automatic.
Remember, the dealer who sells the stunning DeSoto Automatic also sells the high-style Plymouth. Well, Groucho, we have some people with interesting stories for you now. They were chosen just before we went on the air. And here they come, Mrs. Pauline Mells and Mr. Eric Sanders. Would you come in, please, and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks, to You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word and you'll divide $100. It's a common word, something you find around the house. Mrs. Pauline Mells and Eric Sanders. Miss Mells, I'll start with you. What is your hometown?
Crookston, Minnesota.
What's that?
Crookston, Minnesota.
Somebody out there from Venezuela. You're married, I presume, eh, Pauline?
Yes, I am. About 12 years.
12 years. Did you meet this chap in Crookston?
No, I met my husband in a singing class at night school.
No. You met your husband at a singing class in night school?
Yes, I did.
In other words, your romance got started off on a sour note, eh?
No, we got along beautifully.
Do you think a duet sounds better when a couple's in love?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Isn't there a saying that says if music is the food of love, play on?
Have you ever heard a couple of romantic cats on a back fence?
I don't think so.
Where are you from, Mr. Sanders? Sanders.
Sanders, mm-hmm. I was born in Colgate, Oklahoma.
Oh. Well, in that case, you must have a full set of teeth, huh? What sort of work do you do, Eric?
I sell worms.
You say you sell worms?
I do.
Well, who buys these worms? Early birds?
No, farmers and agriculturists and people who wish to better their soil.
Well, how do worms help the farmer? Do they give him some new angles and...
Well, they certainly do. They homogenize the soil and loosen it up for aeration. And, of course, the castings of an earthworm is the richest soil known to science. That's the homogenized and blending of all our materials in the soil, and it's deposited around the roots. And, of course, that helps in a tremendous number of ways.
Well, how does the worm know where to go?
They work around the roots of anything that lives, and they will eat nothing which lives but anything which has lived and died.
Like vultures, don't they?
Yes. As a matter of fact, they're good eating garbage, too. Dead animals, anything which has lived and died, either animal or vegetable.
I wish I'd have met you some months ago.
I wish you had, too. I really mean it.
You weren't planning on draping me around an orange tree, were you?
No, I was planning on making an earthworm farmer out of you.
Yeah, well, I expect you to give me some of those worms. I'm going to try it.
Give you? Sure.
Well, I'll buy them.
Oh, well, that's fine. Where do you want to deliver? I know where you live.
Deliver them tomorrow.
I can't make it tomorrow. I'm delivering $500 worth in Vista.
Well, I hadn't planned on any sale of that magnitude. Well, where do you live now?
Fullerton.
Fullerton, well, couldn't you put the worms out and just tell them to come to my house? Huh?
Those people write to me in Fullerton, just Fullerton, California, earthworms. That's the only right, and I get it.
Just Mr. Earthworms, Fullerton, California?
That's right.
Huh? Well, how is it you know so much about worms, Eric? Are you
just naturally attracted to each other? Yes, we have something in common. People don't realize how large an industry it's becoming because of the fact in California now there's an earthworm association with 200 members. I'm not affiliated with it myself because I've always felt that I could merchandise my own product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been reasonably successful.
Yes, you have. Particularly here, huh? Pauline, do you have any hobbies like raising ladybugs?
Yes, I have several hobbies.
Oh, here it comes, huh?
Well, cooking.
Well, let's take them one at a time. You a good cook?
Pretty good.
What's your husband's favorite dish?
Well, he's fond of my prime ribs.
I'm sure he is, but let's take the cooking. Huh? What does your husband do for a living?
He's a Los Angeles police officer.
Oh, a police officer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how do you like being married to a cop, policeman?
Well,
I suppose it's all right in a pinch, but how... No groaning, please. Tell us about it.
Well, it has its good points and its bad points. Of course, their hours are long, and you never know when they're going to come home, and everybody's always yelling at them. And,
well, they're yelling at everybody else, too.
They're on call 24 hours a day, and the pay isn't very high. And
well, as Gilbert and Sullivan put it, a policeman's lot is not a happy one, you
That's
know.
That's very true.
You happen to know that song, by the way?
Well, isn't that from the Pirates of Penzance?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's one of my favorites.
I think I might know it.
Should we try it, huh?
I'll
just a chorus or so. I'll start, and if you can remember, you just chime in, huh?
All right.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've sung this. When a felon's not engaged in his employment,
his employment,
or maturing his felonious little plan,
little plan,
his capacity for innocent enjoyment,
sent enjoyment,
is just as great as any honest man,
honest man.
Our feelings we with difficulty smother,
difficulty smother,
when constabulary duties to be done,
to be done.
Oh, take one consideration with another,
with another.
A policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Oh,
when constabulary duties to be done, a policeman's lot is not a happy one. Now, this is the part I like. Your part I like. When the enterprising burglar's not a burgling,
not a burgling,
and the cutthroat is unoccupied and crime,
occupied and crime.
Oh, he loves to hear the little brook a-gurgling,
brook a-gurgling,
and listen to the merry village chime,
village chime.
When Acosta's finished jumping on his mother,
on his mother.
Oh, he loves to lie a-basking in the sun,
in the sun.
Oh, take one consideration with a
another.
A policeman's lot is not a happy one. When constabulary duties to be done, a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Yeah, this is pretty good. Pretty good.
I may have to go back on the stage after. Well, it's been fun talking to you two, but the time has come to play You Bet Your Life. Now, we start you off with a $100 bankroll, and when you try to build it up. But when you miss a question, you lose half your bankroll. Is that clear?
In the race for the $2,000, the first couple won $170, and the secret word is floor.
Okay, now let's see how much money you can make. You selected culinary quiz.
Start with 70? All right,
70. Romano, Munster, and Brie are varieties of what food?
Cheese.
Cheese is correct.
Your bankroll is now $170.
$170. Now, which question do you want to try, Eric 80? The Red?
80.
80. What do you call a Hawaiian feast?
A luau.
Luau is correct. I'm glad you got it.
Well, you now have $250.
$250. Now, what do you want to try?
Shall we pass the 90?
Mm. 90?
All right, we'll try it.
What food do we get from the root of the cassave? C-A-S-S-A-V-E. It's a plant grown in the South that is commonly made into a pudding. And if you don't know, guess.
It's a breadfruit tree. They have it. Most of the natives make. It's a breadfruit tree, and they pound it up and make a...
Yeah, but what is the name of the pudding?
Oh.
C-A-S-S-A-V-E. Well, take a guess.
Cassave?
No. Sorry, it's tapioca.
Oh, sure. Oh, my heavens.
Well, you've lost half your bankroll, so you still have $125.
No, here's your last chance to be the other couple, so you can quit, whatever you want to do.
Well, we'll try the $100.
$100, all right. Gumbo is another word for what vegetable?
It's,
Okra.
Okra?
Okra, and it's also my brother.
And you wind up with a grand total of $225.
Thanks, and good luck to the Soda Plymouth dealers. Give me a match. All right, George, who's next?
Well, Groucho, we have a married couple for you now. Dr. and Mrs. Jean Bordeaux. Would you come in, please, and meet Groucho Marx?
Welcome. Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Say the secret word, and you'll divide $100. It's a common word, something you find around the house. Dr. and Mrs. Jean Bordeaux, eh? Well, you're a very charming pair. Now, which one of you is Jean?
I am.
Oh, you are, huh? Mrs. Bordeaux, what shall I call you?
You just call me Mary.
Mary, huh? Well, that's a nice, sweet, simple... uninhibited name. Where are you from originally, Mary?
Well, I'm from Murray, Kentucky, Groucho.
Where?
Murray,
Kentucky?
Yes, it's really a very important town. It was really the birthplace of radio.
Is that so?
The man was Nathan B. Stubblefield.
Is that so?
Yes.
I thought Amos and Andy invented radio.
No.
Stubblefield?
Yes, Stubblefield.
That was the name of the man who invented radio?
That was the name of the man
who invented... Before Marconi?
Yes.
The Russians hear about that, huh? You know what, they're going to claim that they invented Stubblefield.
He really did invent it before Marconi, but you know, Liz, that often happens that the real person doesn't get the credit, you know.
That's true. Now, Doc, by the way, what kind of a doctor are you, Doctor? Are you an M.D., a D.D.S., or a B.V.D.?
Ph.D.
A Ph.D., huh? You got to be pretty smart for that. Mary, does the doc give you a feeling of inferiority, or are you, like most wives, superior to your husband?
No, I have no feeling of inferiority. After all, I have 2 degrees myself. A.B. Mm. M.A.
That makes Mary 2 degrees smarter than you, eh?
I have an A.B. and an M.A. plus the Ph.D.
There are more degrees around here tonight than you'll find on a thermometer. As a Ph.D., Doc, have you ever done any teaching?
Yes, I taught at Whitworth College down in Mississippi, at USC... and the Dale Carnegie Institute of Public Speaking and Effective Human Relations.
Why do they call it the Institute of Public Speaking and Human Relations?
Because they teach public speaking and human relations.
Thanks. I thought they taught how to win friends. Why do you emphasize public speaking?
Few things are more important to anyone than to be able to speak effectively in public.
That's true. And one of the things that are more important is being able to keep your trap shut in public. Well, I didn't mean you. I just... Me, I meant. Well, since you're an expert on public speaking, could you give us some tips on the subject, Doc? Could you boil it down to a few words?
Boiled down, I think you could sum it up by saying, just be yourself. have a good opening. For example, you should startle an audience.
Good opening? You mean the back door, right near where
you... You should startle an audience.
You say you should startle your audience?
Yeah.
What do you mean? When you open your mouth, you should let a flock of pigeons fly out? How do you startle them?
For example, you might say to this audience, why did you come here tonight?
A lot of them have said that to each other. Huh?
Or you could startle an audience by standing in front of them with your hand closed and say, I'm going to open my hand and show you something the world has never seen before. And after I open my hand, they will never see this again. Open your hand, take out a peanut, crack it, and eat it.
It isn't enough that the audience eats popcorn. I want the actors to eat peanuts. Doc, what sort of work are you doing now?
I'm a psychotherapist.
That means nothing to me. What are you doing, Doc?
I help people who have become emotionally upset to get back on an even keel emotionally.
Oh, you're a shrunken head man. You're a couch boy, is that it? What is it like being married to a psychotherapist? Does he ever try to analyze you, Mary?
Oh, yes, there are a few little problems connected with it. For instance, I sort of have a creative imagination, I think, and dream. I have just lovely little dreams, but I just can't dare mention them because, you know, to a psychotherapist, all dreams
have some significance.
Oh, yes, they're very dark. So if I tell my dream, why, he's liable to end up saying, well, now, who do you hate? And who do you want to murder now? And me? Well, I love everybody. I long ago took Booker T. Washington's motto as mine. I resolved to let no man belittle my soul by making me hate him.
That's wonderful. Old Booker T. had plenty on the ball, didn't he?
He did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've learned a lot talking to you two, but I imagine even a successful psychotherapist would like to win some money, wouldn't you? So let's play You Bet Your Life. You understand the game, huh? You try to run your original bankroll of $100 into more than our other couples. And remember, if you miss a question, you lose half your bankroll.
In the race for the $2,000, the earthworm grower and the housewife are leading with $225.
Now, let's see how much money you can make. You select a dictionary quiz, and remember, the more the question is worth, the harder it is.
How about $70?
You could discuss it with Mary there. Don't talk
70?
To me.
Oh, that's all right. We'll...
All right, what do you call the jars used for keeping tobacco fresh?
Humidors.
Humidor is right.
Your bankroll is now $170.
Now, what do you want to try?
How about 80?
It's ask Mary.
Yeah,
all right. How many years in a millennium?
1,000.
1,000 years is correct.
You now have $250.
You can quit or you can go ahead. It's up to you.
Let's go ahead.
All right, fine.
How about it?
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
What do you want? Do you want 80,
about
90,
90?
10, anyone 90. You want. 90. Most of the gold at Fort Knox is in the form of bars. What is the proper word for a bar of gold?
A bar.
Talk it over.
Come on, a bar of gold.
Pig.
No, you're flirting with it. It's ingot.
Ingot. Oh.
Well, you lost half of your bankroll, so you now have $125.
Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couple.
Make it the 100.
100?
How about it?
Yeah. All right. If a misanthrope hates mankind, what is a misogynist?
Oh, he hates women.
He sure does. Give him the money. Thanks, and good luck to the Minnesota Plymouth dealer.
You wind up with $225. And that means, Groucho, that there's a tie for the big question chance. Mr. Sanders and Mrs. Mells with $225, and the doctor and his wife with $225.
In
just one moment, they'll get the chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. All right, Groucho, here are our winning couples. Mr. Sanders and Mrs. Mells and Dr. Bordeaux and his wife. All set for a chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. Now, each of the couples will write an answer on the card, and, of course, if they all get it right, we'll divide the money between them.
Think carefully, and please, no help in the audience. Here it is. For $2,000, what is the name given to the promontories on either side of the Straits of Gibraltar? One is in Spain, and the other in Africa. It's a name that's been used for centuries.
That's something I know.
I don't see your card. Sanders and Mrs. Mells, Malta. No, that's wrong. Dr. Bordeaux and his wife, Pillars of Hercules. Right. So you two win $2,000. Hey! Plus, how much in the quiz, George?
Well, you won $225 in the quiz.
That's $2,225. What are you going to do with all that money?
You won't believe us, but we're going to buy a DeSoto.
Are you? Why shouldn't I believe you? It's the best car on the market. Well, congratulations on the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. You bet your life.
Thank you.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at the same time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also brought to you by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember that the dealers who sell the outstanding DeSoto Automatic with fully automatic power flight transmission also have on display the remarkable new Plymouth, engineered and built to be your best buy in the low-priced field. DeSoto, Plymouth, two great new cars. Both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see the DeSoto Automatic.
Folks, here's a reminder from the National Safety Council. Look out for the driver who doesn't look out for you. You Bet Your Life, transcribed from Hollywood, is produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jack Meekin. This is George Fenneman signing off with more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. You Bet Your Life is heard by our armed forces throughout the world.
From March 24th, 1954 on NBC, You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx and George Fenneman. The secret word for that episode? Floor. F-L-O-O-R. Floor. Because of the simple format of the series, You Bet Your Life aired simultaneously on NBC radio and television at the same time every week during its long run on the National Broadcasting Company. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I sincerely hope you enjoyed my selections. Once again, if you want to get in touch, it's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com and the website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. Please join me again soon for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.